I love that you do this. A new angle. I love it.
It's fun. It's something new.
Do you have theme music yet?
We do. Josh Herbold, the accounting professor, recorded it.
Nice.
That signals you haven't listened to the episode yet.
I missed. I know. I did miss the. I haven't. Because typically I do my podcast listening on runs.
There you go.
Something for which I have not been able to carve out time in the last month, very sadly.
Hello and welcome to A New Angle. I'm your host, Justin Angle, Associate Professor of Marketing here at the University of Montana College of Business. This podcast is my chance to talk with innovative thinkers, both savvy vets and up-and-coming stars in the Montana business ecosystem. My goal with these conversations is to dig deep into how these people think, to understand how they view the world and conceptualize the opportunities it presents. Let's go. Hello and welcome back. Thanks for tuning in. If this is your first episode, we appreciate it. Welcome. We're glad you found us. If you're coming back for more, we thank you as well. You're an important part of building this community. We're trying to grow this podcast, so help us out. Rate, review, share, subscribe, all those things that drive all the algorithms. Those are particularly important in the early days of a podcast. So help us out if you're so inclined. Today, I got the chance to sit down with new University of Montana president, Seth Bodnar. And wow, what an impressive guy Seth is. Valedictorian of his class at West Point, Special Forces Green Beret, Chief of Staff to General Petraeus, an Assistant Professor of Economics at West Point, Rhodes Scholar, two master's degrees from Oxford University, then a rising star at GE Transportation. He stepped away from all that to get back into service, to take this role as a president of a public research university. It was really interesting to get Seth's thoughts on leadership, on team building, on building change, on getting buy-in in an organization, on dealing with crisis, and a lot of other things relevant to this community. We do get into the weeds at one point on some acronyms and such that might not make sense to those outside of the University of Montana realm. The first of those is APASP. What the heck does that mean? It stands for Academic Programs and Administrative Services Prioritization. I know that's really exciting. The second is SPCC. That's the Strategic Planning Coordinating Council. And the other is the UPC, University Planning Council. So when Seth gets into the sort of dynamics of the structural changes he's trying to make, he references those three entities. And now you know what they are. So there'll be a test at the end. And I'm sure you're looking forward to that. Anyway, I'll get out of the way. Without further ado, I give you Seth Bodnar. So I'm here with University President Seth Bodnar. Seth, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Justin. It's great to be here.
So you're about 6 weeks into the job.
Yeah, I guess so. It's coming up. This is, I guess, my sixth week.
Yeah, yes. So does it or does it still feel like you're drinking through a fire hose?
No, I think it's more of fire hydrant.
Fire hydrant. I can imagine. Actually, I really can't. I mean, we go back a little bit in the sense that we've gone for jogs occasionally during the job search process here. And you know, I feel like that was this precious time for me to sort of get to know you a little bit. Mm-hmm. But also start to understand, like, this guy, he has some sort of balance in his life. Do you feel like you have balance in your life right now?
Well, I first want all your listeners to know that these runs that we've gone on have been like light trots for Justin. He's very kindly not run me into the ground as he could. To the balance question, to be honest, right now I don't.
Right.
You know, but that's you come into a new role. You know, you're doing 16, 17 hour days as I am right now, just trying as best I can to get to know this community, to get to listen, to learn from as many people as possible, to get out around the state, mm-hmm. To be at as many events around the university as possible. And that's really important, I think, both for me personally, but for the community as well, to anytime you go through a leadership transition, presence and proximity of that leader is really important. So I'm trying to do the best I can. I will say my my kiddos have suffered a little bit from that, and I will absolutely say my fitness has. And so we'll get back to a little bit of a better balance soon, hopefully.
Well, you seem to be pulling it off well. It doesn't look like the fitness has suffered, but it might feel that way. I understand. And I mean, yeah, you mentioned your children. You got three kids. How old are your kids?
I have three kids. I have 7-year-old twins and then a little 4-year-old.
And your wife, Chelsea, pediatrician, she's in the midst of a startup of her own, right?
She is. Yeah. Chelsea is a great thinker, an incredibly smart, talented person, great physician, and has realized the potential of telemedicine. In other words, seeing patients online to really transform the way pediatricians see their patients after hours.
Sure.
And to improve not just convenience, but quality and consistency of care. So she started a company and is working actually with some pediatricians across Montana to expand the use of this tool.
Fantastic. It seems like you two might be ships passing in the night at this point of your lives.
We have been a little bit busy, but she's also in the midst of everything else that she's doing has been a rock of not just support, but a true partner in this process. In addition to everything else she's got on her own, she's been a great coach, a great friend, and just a wise sounding board.
And, you know, as you mentioned, you're getting to know this community. This community is getting to know you. You know, knowing a little bit about your background, this has to be one of the more, if not the most, public-facing positions you've had.
Absolutely, yeah.
And how do you feel about that? I mean, now you're living in a house that's the university president's house. I mean, it's sort of you're on the job 24 hours a day in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you are, and I think it's that has its challenges, right? Mm-hmm. That's you are literally in a fishbowl, and not everything I say or do is perfect, and I'm going to make some mistakes, but I am doing my absolute best to mm-hmm. do what I think is right for this university and work with the very talented, very wise, experienced people across this, not just here on campus, but across this entire community to help position UM for continued excellence and vibrancy for the next 125 years of our existence.
For sure. And along those lines, you've had a pretty amazing career to date. At 38 years old, the number of things you do, I mean, that would fill the lifetime of many people. Thinking about that, you know, West Point valedictorian, your master's degrees at Oxford, teaching at West Point, and thinking about some of the great leaders you've worked with, Jeff Immelt, General Petraeus, et cetera, I'd really like to understand something about your leadership style and what you might articulate as like the fundamental tenets of your leadership style.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks. It's a great question. I've thought a lot about this over the years. I don't think I have as succinct and clear an answer as I'd like. I do want to say I did just turn 39. Whenever it feels like it was 2 weeks ago, but it was the other day.
Belated happy birthday.
So yeah, but thanks. No, but I think, you know, right from day one at West Point, there's two things I remember that first day. One is they teach you the definition of leadership. They just start to drill into you what it is that a leader should be doing. Second,
you know, where is that in, like, is that in a particular class? Is it in the culture?
No,
where
does that live? It's just there? Right up front. They say, you know, you are here. We're here to help shape you as a leader.
Okay.
Right. And a leader is to provide purpose, direction, motivation to help that organization achieve its mission.
Sure.
So you start right off the bat that's what you're there to do. I mean, the only other thing I remember that day is I got a tuberculosis test, you know, and you get the skin test, right?
Yeah.
And that, you know, because I prayed that night that it would be positive so I could go home because I was not clear on what I'd gotten myself into. But I think what, you know, perhaps counterintuitively to some, what I learned as a leader, you know, throughout my time in the Army, when I joined a platoon in the 101st Airborne Division in Iraq. I was the new guy.
Yeah.
I hadn't been there for the initial part of the invasion, but there we were in the midst of a really tough, you know, counterinsurgency environment, lack of clarity of our mission, really, you know, lack of security. We just did not have the infrastructure. And I realized that my job wasn't to come in there and say, all right, I've got this all figured out, sure, guys, right? But it was to make sure that I did everything I could to position my team for success, to make sure that we got that everyone there on my platoon, my 40 guys, and we were all guys at that point. I was in the infantry at that time, and that they were successful, right? Mm-hmm. And I saw that again when I joined a special forces team. You know, it's a funny thing when you're a young, and I was young, fit, strapping green beret, and you know, you're the captain. But yep, believe me, you walk into a special forces team room full of a bunch of master sergeants who've been Green Berets for 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
They don't snap to attention and say, sir, what are we going to do? Right. It's more like, hey, captain, do you got anything? Because we're sort of busy here. And so your job as a leader in those situations, a little bit like, you know, being the manager of the New York Yankees, right? It's you've got incredibly talented people, and your job is to make sure that one, they have everything they need to reach their potential, and two, that you're helping guide the activities of that team in the most effective and coordinated way. Right. And I actually saw the same thing in the business world, believe it or not. Uh-huh. And that you know, I led a team of software engineers. Right, we had a business with hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue selling software solutions around the world, and I wasn't coding. You know, I wasn't writing the actual code, but my job was to make sure that those incredibly talented people had what they needed, that they understood where we were headed, and that we were holding ourselves, not me holding them accountable, that we were holding ourselves accountable to getting there. And that, I think, is the basis. Some might call it servant leadership. Mm-hmm. I call it maybe an enabling leadership, but I think that's a leader's job, is to make sure that we're clear on what we're trying to accomplish, that everyone understands their role in that process, and that everyone's able to perform to the best of their ability and reach their full potential in getting there. That's really what I think the most effective leaders do. So I'm not saying I'm perfect, but that's what I aspire to.
I mean, you're obviously, that explanation of leadership is tremendous. But you're also, the record would indicate that you've been able to do that stuff too. Is there a moment you can recall that, like, okay, this is the moment where I'm going to win these guys over or not? Like maybe early in your military career?
You know, I think it takes time. I mean, it takes time to build trust, right? And I think when your team is looking at you, they're really looking to two things. And they're looking to see, are you competent at what you're supposed to do?
Okay.
Right. Not competent at their job, but at your job. Right. Mm-hmm. And do you have the best interests of this organization and of each of the people in that organization? Do you have those best interests first? Are you looking out for yourself?
Yeah.
I think when you can demonstrate those things, that's when you get the buy-in of a team. Doesn't mean that there's not hiccups and hurdles and debates, some of them robust, but that's what you have to strive for. You know, when I was graduating, getting close to graduating from West Point, I had a mentor of mine, a guy by the name of Barry McCaffrey. He was the youngest four-star general in the Army, Army's history, actually. He was a multiple tour veteran of Vietnam, you know, pretty severe injury to his arm during his second tour. Was the drug czar under the Clinton administration.
Yes, okay.
You know, as I was getting ready to graduate, he pulled me aside, and I had been very fortunate. I'd been awarded a Rhodes Scholarship, and so I was going to get the chance to go to Oxford. And, you know, he pulled me aside, and he said, let me tell you something. He said, don't ever mention to your soldiers that you got this scholarship, that you went to Oxford. He's like, they don't care. Mm-hmm. What they care about is whether you have their best interests in mind, and you're going to do everything you can, and you're competent, and you're going to bring them home safely. So that's what you focus on.
Yeah.
And he was right. I never did mention that. It's funny because then we, you know, fast forward 10 years, I commanded a platoon, maybe it wasn't quite 10 years, but commanded a special forces team. And I was leaving my special forces team and my team sergeant, you know, the master sergeant and his wife, and Chelsea and I went out to dinner, and we sat down, and you know, we were actually over in Seattle, and he sat down and he said, hey, Captain, I got you a Rogue beer. You know, Rogue is a great brewery over there. Yeah. And I said, oh, thanks. He said, because you were a Rogue scholar, right? And I said, doesn't matter. Thank you. Right. And it proved that he didn't know
what a Rhodes Scholar was,
but he cares what a Rhodes Scholar is. It really doesn't matter. What matters is, are you effective at the job that you're supposed to do? Mm-hmm. And do you have the best interests in mind? So that's as I come into this role, I'm trying to keep that same mentality. Right. I wouldn't ever claim to try to be a professor of marketing or a chemistry professor or, you know, a law professor. But there are things that I'm supposed to do for this university in terms of advocating for those, in terms of helping make sure we go through a process of setting a clear strategy, that we are being effective in our recruiting and our retention efforts. And so I'm focused on, you know, trying to make sure I'm doing my job, the things that I in this capacity should be doing, and that I hope I'm trying to demonstrate. I really have the best interest, not just of this place, but the great people that work at this place at the forefront of everything we do.
Yeah, and it would seem that this is a theme you've seen before in your career, you know, as a newly minted officer into a leadership position in Iraq, as a fast rising star at GE, and now as a university president. An argument you've probably come across before is, hey, it's too early for you to be doing this. You're too young, or this is too soon, or haven't you paid your dues, or... And do you think intentionally about sort of inoculating yourselves to those arguments? Or you just do what you do and just sort of let the chips fall where they may? I just want to get into your head about how you approach that.
Yeah, I absolutely think of those things. And I think it's, as I come into this role, I mean, I submitted my candidacy for this role knowing that I was a non-traditional pick. Mm-hmm. I would have not been at all bitter, surprised, you know, upset had I not been selected, right? But right. I submitted my candidacy with a fair and clear depiction of what I've done and that I'd love to do everything I can to help this and work in support of this great university. And so whether that means I haven't paid dues or I'm too young to do that, I'd let others decide that.
Sure.
And that's I think what you do when you put yourself out there in a very public way. For a position like this, you know, I was very honored, very humbled to be selected. And I take the confidence placed in me by the selection committee, by the community, by the Board of Regents incredibly seriously. And I can't guarantee that I'll be perfect. I can't guarantee that I won't make some mistakes, but I can guarantee I'm going to work harder than I've ever worked. I am doing that right now. Mm-hmm. And then I'm working to the best interests of this university. And I think that's, at the end of the day, that's all you can do. And yet you do, I think, you have to let people form their opinions about you and listen to their feedback and adjust and always continuously seek to improve. And I'm trying to do that. And I think people will, you know, will certainly form their opinions about that over time.
Mm-hmm. And as you come in, you know, I'm sure there are, well, I know there's forces because I sort of count myself in one of them, although I don't know if I'm part of a force.
Yeah.
I count myself as one of those on campus that feels like we need some pretty serious change. Like what we've been doing is not working, and the numbers sort of bear that out. And there's probably others on the campus that think we don't really need to change. We'll just keep doing what we're doing, and sooner or later things will come around, and truth is probably somewhere in the middle. How do you kind of approach that? You come into this culture where some people have specific ideas of what needs to happen, other people don't know, and anything else in between.
Mm-hmm. I think, I mean, the good news is we're building on almost 2 years of work.
Okay.
And committee work and community examination of, you know, whether it was through the SPCC and generating more than 5,000 data points in terms of the vision, the direction of this university. And you take APAS, where literally people work 15-hour days for nearly a year, 15-hour days at times, to formulate an assessment of the strengths of our programs. And I think pulling those together, we're building on a great body of work and a great body of information. I wouldn't purport to know exactly the level of change that should happen. But what we're trying to do in reconstituting this UPC is to get a representative group of this university together and say, all right, we need to be clear. We need to be intentional. We need to be focused on understanding our strengths and applying those strengths to the greatest opportunities that we see. And that may mean some degree of significant change. Mm-hmm. But I think we need to embrace that idea. We need to embrace the idea that we have to adapt. We have to continuously evolve to meet the needs of our students, to meet the needs of the state, to meet the needs of this country. But it's a process that I think we have to go through together.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to do with the UPC. I've been hopefully very clear, but I want to reiterate, I'm not a person that says or feels like I'm going to come to walk down off Mount Sentinel with, you know, read the APAS reports, read the strategic vision, and then lay out the specific plan for university. I think that'd be both not just arrogant, but incredibly unwise of me to try to do that. I think we have to bring together a talented group of people to do that jointly. But we do have to, I think, be clear, and we have to make some decisions. We have to. Excellence requires decisions. Excellence requires choices. The alternative is really a drift to mediocrity, and none of us can let that happen to this great university.
And so as you're laying that out there, it makes me sort of, it harkens back to your sort of leadership philosophy of, you know, proving to the team that you're good at the job that you need to do, and that the people, and that you're not going to get in the way of the people trying to do their jobs. As I hear you talk about, this sense of humility is a big theme. How do you balance that humility with your own sort of internal confidence of, hey, I can do this job, I'm ready. Mm-hmm. This is an opportunity. I'm going to execute well in this role.
Right.
Because you have to, I mean, you wouldn't be where you were unless you had tremendous confidence in your ability to achieve.
Well, you know, I think everybody has a mix of kind of confidence and massive self-doubt, right? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, you compensate for through hard work.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really interesting process to think through as you take on a new job, right? It is daunting at times. And I think you'd be crazy to not come into this role and have those moments where you say, holy cow.
Yeah. You know? What have been the biggest surprises?
You know, I think the biggest surprise is, I think there's some positives. There's some, and then there's some things that, boy, this is tough. I think the positives, I just think there is such a passion for this place. And there's mm-hmm. so much excitement around the university and the great things that are happening here. So I think one of the things I'm really focused on is doing a much better job of communicating those. But I think on that point of communication is it's, you know, you work really hard to make sure that you're engaging the right folks, that you're doing, that you're understanding the full context of just not everything you say, but as you communicate certain things, and that the sequencing of communications and the hard work of trying to make the entire campus feel included in the process of leading this university, which I'm working really hard to do it, but it's really tough just for both from an hours in the day standpoint and the dispersion of people. You know, so I think it's something I want to do a much better job of.
Absolutely. It's one of those things too. I mean, we talk about this in marketing class. Like, when you see communications done well, it looks easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like watching Michael Jordan dunk a basketball.
Right.
I mean, it looks effortless.
Mm-hmm.
And that almost belies or does belie the difficulty in crafting and executing a message and getting everybody on that message and not wavering when you can get distracted from it, for sure.
Agreed. Yeah. I think you're exactly right.
So, you know, as we kind of look to, you know, your first 6 weeks here, we talked about some surprises, some roadblocks. You know, if you were to only be given 2 years here,
mm-hmm.
and you had to walk away, what would be successful for you?
Yeah.
How would you define success?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think that my job in this position, right? I think I've, as I said last week, you know, if I've been named the captain of this ship, my job isn't to specifically define the exact course. I think I have a view as a member of a leadership team and what that course looks like, but defining the exact course is not, you know, solely my responsibility, but making sure that we have a course
mm-hmm.
that everyone understands, and that we're clear and intentional about how we're working in an integrated and efficient manner to follow that course. That's what I see as my job. And so over the next, you know, if you fast forward to 2 years from now, and I think if we have a clear strategy that people understand, we understand where we're focused to drive excellence. You know, we understand what our North Star is.
Yeah.
And the strategies that we have in place to guide us toward that. And when you talk to people, not just here on campus, but around the state, they understand, hey, this is what UM's about. I think that's, I think we'd all be happy. I mean, not all of us, but I think that's where I have the biggest responsibility in that realm.
Your talk last week, you gave, just for listeners so you understand, Seth did a talk to faculty, to talk to staff, and talk to students, kind of rolling out a near-term and long-term vision. And two things really stood out to me in that presentation. The one was creating a structure where strategic thinking and innovation is ingrained in the process, rather than having these sort of ex ante groups that swoop in and give their recommendations. Having a system where you can learn and integrate and implement new ideas, and like you've said, think also evaluate where you're not performing and maybe should stop doing things. That seems like a new idea for this university.
Well, I think we have those structures in place. You know, okay. We have our planning assessment committee. We have we have the university planning committee. We have the budget committee. We have our implementation mechanisms through cabinet, through the deans. Mm-hmm. We have the accreditation and assessment committee. So if you think about that planning assessment continuum in terms of you develop a plan/strategy, which drives your budget, which then you implement, and then you assess the effectiveness, and then that assessment feedback into your new plan, and you continue around that loop. We've all seen that diagram.
Yeah.
But I think we've gotten a little off kilter. And it's not through anything necessarily that was bad, but we just had some process, right, through the SPCC, through the APAS task force that did phenomenal work, right, and gave us some great a great foundation off of which to build. But I think at this point, we now have to crystallize that into a plan,
right,
that then drives our budget. We implement and then have that mechanism for continuous assessment, continuous learning, mm-hmm. and get us back onto that planning assessment continuum in a clear and an intentional way.
Exactly. And then the other thing you mentioned in your talk, which I found to be a really powerful headline, if you will, is this is not a crisis, the situation we're in. And I found that really meaningful to just hear the leader of the institution have the kind of poise to say something like that. And also, you know, for faculty members or, you know, staff or whatever on campus that sort of feel the need for change to do something. Yeah. It had a calming effect and a sense of urgency to act.
Well, I think we do have an urgency to act, to be clear. But I think what I wanted people, because we talked about the fact that we have a structural imbalance right now,
yeah.
right? Our recurring revenues, our recurring expenses are not in line. And so we're using kind of, we'll call it one-time funds, things to make the budget at an overall level balance. A structural imbalance can continue for a time, but not indefinitely.
Yeah.
And that's where we have to be clear and lay out a four-year plan, a five-year plan, really, from 18, starting with 18, to get those two things back into structural balance. But I wanted to be very clear that, look, we have an imbalance, and we're not going to just overnight do massive across-the-board non-strategic cuts.
No rash reaction.
But we have to be clear about what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. Because when you defer decisions, all you're left with are non-strategic across-the-board cuts.
Right.
And that erodes the quality of an organization, and we can't do that. Mm-hmm. And so to maintain excellence, to maintain quality, to enhance quality, you have to make choices. And the urgency for the campus to make choices, I think, is there.
Sure.
But those choices then will impact the budget over time, right? Both on the revenue side, to be clear, as well as on the expense side.
No, I like that, framing it in terms of revenue and the many ways we can do that. You know, as you as you kind of look at this, I'm sure you're coming in and evaluating structures, but you're also evaluating people. Do you have different ideas about how you change structures versus how you change or try to motivate people to change?
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I think your operations management folks will have to make sure I correct me on the exact wording of the quote, but Deming, the quality expert, okay. would tell you that a bad system will defeat a good person every mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. And so I would tell you, as I've come in here, I've been primarily looking at structures and systems to say, all right, when I talk about our communications or how we're talking both to alumni, to students, all the way from the first time we see them to when they show up on the Oval, are we as integrated in that process as we can be? And we're taking a hard look there. You know, I think the same thing when you think about student success. We had a great discussion in ASUM cabinet this morning about looking at student well-being, you know, just inside and out of the classroom in a more integrated way. So, like, how can we, if we say retention and student success are key imperatives for us, structurally, what do we need to do to make sure that, you know, people, great people across this organization, are working with the support of the structures in place rather than in spite of them, right? That's the job of a leader, is to unlock the full potential of people to solve the challenges or you know, seize the opportunities that we have. And so that's where I think right now, I mean, I'm very much focused on, are we aligned in how we're trying to accomplish some of the most important things for this university?
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I've heard you say, Seth, that time is your most valuable commodity. And I know you have a hard stop. You've been very generous with your time. I really appreciate that. One final question. Maybe it only gets a half a page a night, but is there something on your nightstand that you're trying to chip away at reading-wise that tell us something about you?
Good question. I think what I've been rereading a great book called How Universities Work by John Lombardi. I think it's a great higher ed refresher. I was, you know, it's been looking through Michael Crow's Designing the New American University. I also had just been reading Joe Biden's book called Promise Me Dad, which I think is an interesting story of just pain and growth through just such tremendous loss. I actually was in Baghdad with Bo Biden, the vice president's son, and just a phenomenal guy. And horribly sad to see his passing. And this book, from a man and Vice President Biden who just saw so much kind of loss throughout his life, whether it was his first wife and his daughter and now his son. And his approach to that, I think, has been, he's an impressive human being. So that's one that I've been getting through at night right now.
Fantastic. Yeah. Seth Bodnar, thank you.
All right. Thanks, Justin.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Seth. He's an impressive guy, and I hope he can get this University of Montana community moving in the right direction. We're seeing good evidence that that's already happening. Thanks for listening to this episode. We really appreciate it. And remember that A New Angle was brought to you by CED, Consolidated Electrical Distributors. They're our first sponsor, and we can't thank them enough. CED is one of the largest electrical wholesale companies in the country with nearly 600 locations nationwide. CED is a privately owned business-to-business wholesale company that distributes just about every piece of equipment that keeps your lights on, your energy flowing, and your lifestyle comfortable. CED is also an important employer in our community, and they have a keen interest in University of Montana graduates. To explore career opportunities, check out www.cedcareers.com. Coming up next week, we're excited to have an episode with Missoula Mayor John Engen. And if you have any suggestions for other guests, cool people doing awesome things, please let us know. And finally, if you enjoy this podcast, there are several ways you can support it. First, rate us on iTunes. Ratings help others find the podcast. Second, please write a review. The more reviews we get, and hopefully positive ones, the more we can grow the show. And third, please just tell your friends about it. In addition, you can support A New Angle financially. For information on sponsorship opportunities, please visit our website, www.business.umt.edu/anewangle. There you will also find a link to support the pod. Before we go, I'd like to thank a few folks for making this project happen. First, my colleagues here at the College of Business for supporting this endeavor. In particular, Professor Josh Herbold for writing and recording original music for the show. We also have music provided by Switchback Records, a student-run record label here at the college. I'd also like to thank Elizabeth Willey and recent UM graduate Michelle DeFluke and the entire comms team here at the College of Business for all their help. And finally, thanks to my producer, Stefan Borson. If you have any questions, suggestions, comments, insults, whatever, please email me at anewangle@umontana.edu. Help us spread the word and be sure to use the hashtag anewangle when you do. Thanks, and see you next time.